From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. They're flat, they're slimy, and they hide under rocks on river bottoms. At up to 2 feet in length, the Ozark hellbender is one of the world's largest salamanders, and they're disappearing. There are fewer than 600 left in the rivers of southern Missouri and northern Arkansas. Scientists have been making a huge effort to get them to breed in captivity. Now, as St. Louis Public Radio's Veronique LaCapra reports, it looks like 2012 could be the year of new hope for hellbenders.
I'm in the mood for love.
It's kind of a honeymoon resort for giant salamanders.
Simply because you're near me.
But instead of romantic music and champagne to get the zoo's hellbenders in the mood, Jeff Etling and his staff at the St. Louis Zoo have given them chilly, rocky bottom streams.
What we're looking at is two 40-foot long raceways or simulated streams that we've constructed over the last 2.5 to 3 years.
They also built a mini water treatment plant. It controls the stream's water temperature and chemistry to mimic the hellbender's cool, spring-fed Ozark rivers, minus any distracting predators or pollution.
You'll notice that if you kind of look through the screen, you can see here there's an artificial nest box right here in front of us.
Buried in the gravel stream bed are concrete boxes with a narrow entrance tunnel at one end. They may not sound very comfy, but to a male hellbender, they're the perfect man cave. Just what he needs to hunker down, fertilize, and guard his stash of eggs.
I'm in the mood for love.
But a hellbender doesn't exactly fit the image of a romantic Casanova.
It's got these large wrinkles of skin on the side of its body, and they have a large flat head that looks almost like a pancake and little tiny beady eyes.
Jeff Brigler is the state herpetologist for the Missouri Department of Conservation.
I have to say a lot of people think they're not the prettiest animal in the world, but I've grown very fond of them.
Zookeeper Shauna Schutte loves them too and thinks they've gotten a bad rap.
They have been called things like snot otters and lasagna sides because they're slimy and they've got frilly little sides on them.
Schutte has been helping to try to breed hellbenders at the zoo because wild hellbenders are in trouble. Development has destroyed a lot of their Ozark habitat. Hundreds have been collected for the illegal pet trade. Others have been killed off by pollution and disease. All these problems have made hellbender populations plummet. But even more alarming, says the Missouri Department of Conservation's Jeff Brigler, is that young hellbenders have disappeared.
All we're seeing is these large adults. And once these die off, there's not going to be any animals behind them.
Brigler says scientists realized if they didn't do something, Ozark hellbenders would soon go extinct. He and others started collecting fertilized eggs to raise them in captivity. And at the St. Louis Zoo, the hellbender breeding program kicked into high gear. At first, things didn't go so well.
We've had females lay eggs indoors, but the males were not fertilizing the eggs. And when we looked at samples of sperm, they looked like they were malformed, and we thought, oh, we just have other problems.
Etling says that's when they built the outdoor raceways with their high-tech water treatment system. This September, 16 Ozark hellbenders moved in. No one expected them to breed right away. Then, one chilly October morning, zookeeper Shauna Schutte put on her wetsuit and snorkeling gear to give the hellbenders their weekly checkup.
And so I was just in the process of collecting animals, you know, recording where they were at, getting weights on them and all that sort of stuff, as well as checking just in the off chance that there were eggs.
She says she opened one of the nest boxes and
I knew right away. I was like, there's fertile eggs in here, and I almost choked on the water in my snorkel because I was so excited.
Jeff Brigler was at the zoo that day, too.
I can't even describe it. It excited us tremendously.
A total of 185 Ozark hellbenders have now hatched at the St. Louis Zoo. Another 1,000-plus will arrive there this spring, raised from wild fertilized eggs. They'll stay at the zoo for another 6 or 7 years until they're big enough to be released. The hope is they'll keep the wild population going until researchers can figure out and fix whatever's going wrong in the environment. For NPR News, I'm Veronique LaCapra in St. Louis.
Renewable energy is growing rapidly in this country. The wind and solar industries are enjoying double-digit growth each year. Part of that is thanks to homeowners who install solar panels, With tax credits and subsidies, it's been possible to make a financial argument for installing them. But in recent years, the price of one fossil fuel, natural gas, has declined so much that even with extra help, solar panels are having difficulty competing. NPR's Jeff Brady reports.
You've probably heard about hydraulic fracturing. Fracking is a controversial drilling technology that some worry is harming the environment. But since 2005, it's also led to a nearly 30% increase in the amount of natural gas produced in the U.S.
We've got a classic situation of supply and demand.
Catherine Klaber heads an industry group near Pittsburgh called the Marcellus Shale Coalition. Natural gas demand has not gone up as quickly as supply, and Klaber says the price has dropped.
A handful of years ago, natural gas could have been in the order of, you know, $12, $13, $14. We're now down to $3 to $4, and that has had a direct impact on consumers.
For utilities that burn natural gas to produce electricity, this has allowed them to hold the line on rates. For most of us, that's a good thing. But for Barbara Scott of Media Pennsylvania, it's made her solar system less of a bargain.
We've got 7 panels on the roof, on the porch roof, and 14 on the main part of the house.
Scott says her family was the first in the community to install solar panels last March, and she was prepared to be an evangelist.
We said, oh, look, we've got our website where you can see our panels at work, and we can have open houses and write newsletter articles and promote the idea of solar.
After rebates and tax incentives, Scott says her family spent $21,000 to install the system. She figured it would take 8 years to recoup the investment. A lot of other people had the same idea at the same time, which sent the price of solar energy credits down. That added 7 years to the payback period. On top of that, Scott says electricity rates aren't going up as quickly as she thought they would, thanks in part to low natural gas prices.
So that, again, adds another 2 years to our payback period.
So you're up to 17 years
now. We're up to 17 years, which is essentially the life of the system. And we haven't even considered what happens if the system breaks or what it's going to cost to take the system off the roof and dispose of it.
Despite this, Scott says she's still happy to have the panels on her house.
But now, knowing that it's maybe, at best, a break-even proposition, we're not so comfortable telling other people to do it.
Scott's experience raises questions about the viability of much larger, utility-scale solar projects built in recent years. Richard Caperton is director of clean energy investment at the Center for American Progress. He says that's not a concern. Many were built with contracts that have set prices.
What's more interesting, though, is that the plants that aren't getting built right now because of cheap natural gas.
Caperton says solar, wind, and even nuclear seem less attractive for investors right now, but that can change quickly. In the past, natural gas prices, like the stock market, have shot up quickly. If that happens, solar panels will seem like a good investment once again. Jeff Brady, NPR News, Philadelphia.